call tonight's meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Could we get a roll call, please? Stephanie?
Steele.
Here.
Merkin.
Here.
Mins.
Here.
McBride.
Here.
Cable.
Here.
Sherwood.
Here.
Are there any changes in additions to the agenda? I'm going to suggest one here, but are there any others? All right, I think we might do better by the public to move that public hearing up above the discussion of the draft traffic impact analysis. So 7.1, move that up to above 6.2. Any thoughts? Could we get a motion to approve that agenda as amended?
I would move we approve 7. We move 7.1 to above 6.2 on the agenda.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Could we just do a voice vote, please, to approve that agenda? All in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Great. The agenda is approved as amended. Are there any changes or additions to the minutes from June 6th? Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved. We now have a time for public comment. This is a time when anyone can comment or raise any issues that are not already set to be heard tonight on the agenda. So anything out of the ordinary, anything not already planned to be discussed.
We also have people sign in.
Yep. I was going to mention that just a second. Doesn't look like we have any. I do want to call your attention to the sign-in sheet at the table just inside the door. We'd love to have some record of your attendance tonight. So if you missed that on your way in, if you could find your way over to that table before you leave tonight and sign in, that would be terrific. All right, then we're on to additional items, beginning with Leanne and the review and recommendation of the countywide watershed assessment.
Good afternoon. I don't have an official presentation. Many of you were in attendance at the joint meeting that was held a few weeks ago with the Planning and Zoning Commission, Story County Conservation Board, and Board of Supervisors. I think everyone, there was a link to the prepared draft by EOR on the website, so hopefully you had an opportunity to review that. Conservation did take action to accept the draft report at Conservation Board this past Monday. I'll be glad to go over any questions you have on the draft report. I just want to spend a little bit of time just talking about the tools and what our plan is for how we communicate this to the public in the future, too. Right now, as you probably are aware, the plan, the final report's on our website at storycountyiowa.gov. And then the two map tools are actually, right now they're hosted by our consultant. By the end of this month, Story County will assume ownership, for lack of any better word. We'll be hosting that internally. And I know some of you have mentioned some concerns or comments that you go to, so this is the restoration protection tool. It is very static. You cannot turn the layers on and on. You can't really delve into it with great detail. Matt Boyd is Story County's GIS specialist, and when we assume ownership and hosting of this, that we will increase the interactive nature of the maps. So that would be a great benefit for us to be able to, one, have this data and then be able to delve into it in a little bit greater detail. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get that done before tonight yet, but once this goes before the Board of Supervisors, that will be in the way it's set up. And that will help us really as we delve into the implementation of it as well. And that is the next step after the Board meets on August 14th. To accept the assessment, we'll start talking about the implementation, what that means, what level that means, prioritizing what that means. Again, this is a kind of that first step. And as best of our knowledge, we are the first county in Iowa to do this on the HUG 12. So that's I think we should celebrate that. It's just really intended to serve as a starting point to get the discussions going and set up our prioritization. With that, any questions?
Well, Dan, you mentioned implementation, and that, when I read this and think about it, has been my big concern. Do you have any thoughts, any ideas? Because this is a huge document, and there's a whole lot in it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts about how the county might go about implementing this, what first steps are, who might be charged with responsibility?
I can tell you the first step will be amending our C2C plan. And so, and I apologize, I don't have a schedule with me, but I think it's your September meeting that will be in front of you to do the review and amendments to, is that right, to the C2C plan, to basically add this as an appendix to the Cornerstone and Capstone plan. What that will do then is allow the county then to build some of the priorities and recommendations in this into the implementation matrix of the C2C plan. Linda, to get to your question, who will be charged with it? I think it's going to be a combination of various entities, even outside of the county structure. But definitely conservation will have a strong role in the implementation, whatever that looks like. And the Board of Supervisors, obviously, as funding for whatever programs are developed, planning and development. Myself, as an employee of the board, too. And county engineer. The Board of Supervisors wearing their drainage district trustees hats, too. So, I mean, so it's going to be a variety of different approaches. But that first implementation step will be adding it into the C2C plan.
I'm not sure what you'd say to this, but I remember an old saying, if it's everybody's responsibility, it's nobody's responsibility. And you've talked about a lot of people, and I certainly understand there are stakeholders there, and there are people who need to, you know, incorporate their part of this assessment in what they're doing. But I'm just fearful that if there isn't a lead person who's making sure that it's happening, that it will kind of fall in the back burner for everybody. The county engineer has roads and bridges to deal with. Jerry's shop has, you know, I see this would be planning and development would have a big role, but they've already got so much going on, and it's not that anybody wouldn't want to. But I'm just kind of speaking from experience. I've seen studies that have been good studies that have been put on the shelf and kind of languished because there was nobody pushing it and saying, no, we've got to get there. You've got to move this up on your schedule or it's just not going to get done.
I think that's a valid concern that I've heard a lot of people say, too. But taking that step to incorporate it into the C2C plan and then further defining it through the implementation matrix will help. I don't know if we'll ever be to one person becomes a watershed coordinator for Story County and what the future holds. Maybe that's something that comes out of, who knows, at this point. Right now we're dealing with the assessment and then accepting that and then having some very candid discussions because there are a lot of recommendations in here that would require some different approaches that we've not used ever. So I know I can't say this is a plan of attack because I don't think we know what that plan of attack is yet.
Mm-hmm. Question for Leanne and the planning staff together. Is there, between the time when the county would recognize this assessment as the contracts with the consultants being complete, however we term that, accept it, approve it, whatever, and the time that any changes would be amended into the C2C plan and then potentially into policy as well, is there anything that would keep us from referencing the assessment in some of the, using the information in the assessment in some of the decisions we make? Because it's not legislative policy, it's not the zoning code, it's not in the subdivision regulations, and it's not even in the plan that is the foundation for those things. But nonetheless, it's good data, it's good information. So should we be avoiding referring back to it or referring back to it as actively as we think necessary in the decisions we make in the future?
Well, here's how I right now we have some draft floodplain products. They're a better MAP product than what we have adopted right now. So from a regulatory standpoint, I and Jerry is right now doing a pilot program. We have to look at what's been adopted by the Board of Supervisors. But we still go back to that draft product because it's a better, it's more accurate. And it helps guide us in how we do some of our decision making, how we approach the permits. Maybe rather than requiring this, we know it's likely it's going to be a different, maybe it will be in the floodplain or it won't be in the future. So we approach it maybe in a different manner because we have that additional information to help us in that discussion and the conclusions we reach. So I think that's an analogy maybe you can use. This is information. It's no different than having a traffic impact analysis to our environmental impact analysis on something that comes forward. It's built into what you're using to draw your conclusions and reach your recommendation to the Board of Supervisors or Board of Adjustment. I think it's a fine line. You can't say page 72 of this assessment said this specifically because, again, it's not, like you said, policy or even a regulatory document.
There's certain things that it can't, legally cannot supplant, like the floodplain maps that we referenced already.
Right.
Yeah.
But once the Board of Supervisors adopts the plan, that says it's the intent to implement the plan.
Yeah. Once we get it added into the C2C plan.
How long do you think that will take?
I think I should have looked at the calendar. I think early September is conservation and your planning and zoning commission, and then I think 2 or 3 weeks later is going before the Board of Supervisors. It's either early October or late September. I mean, it's here. It's not 6 or so more months away.
Good. I have a question, Jerry, for you and your staff. Appendix D, the model stormwater ordinances. Just wanted to know what your initial reaction was to those from the work that you've been doing and all the discussions we've been having as we look at permits and we wonder about what's going on with the water at this or that site. Would this be helpful?
Right. I can tell you that we perused through it early on when that information was provided to us. It's really drafted for the purpose of adoption by a small city. But some of the information in it we gleaned from the amendment that we'll work on. But we did definitely go through it and use some of the information that's in it. But I mean, getting back to your question about the document that ultimately gets approved by the Board of Supervisors, I think our staff sees that as something that we can use to raise a pretty decent argument for some of the things that we're working on ultimately. As you mentioned, there's a lot of valuable data in there. It's very factual, and we definitely see the benefit in the work that we're
I had one concern that I wanted to bring up to you, and it's because I was read through this is the last part I read through, and I noticed all the references to the Code of Federal Regulations and to the Iowa Administrative Code. Those aren't necessarily always easy things to understand for a layperson, and sometimes small developers don't have the staff that will help them understand this and do a good job of it, and they'll just do something that really doesn't really meet the goals. Is that going to be a stretch for your office to provide technical assistance to people to meet those regulations?
Are you referring to the amendment or the watershed assessment
What I'm referring to is all the way through Appendix D.
You're talking about the model.
The model.
What we're working on is not the model. This is something that was submitted by the consultants to help cities in the county that don't have standards to give them the tools to adopt.
So you're saying Appendix D has nothing to do with the county?
There's some relationship to the amendment that we're working on, but that's totally separate from what we're working on.
Okay, then I kind of misunderstood, and I thought it did because it was for the county.
There's some information in there that does relate to it, but again, it's really okay. Set out to help smaller cities to adopt standards.
And I probably missed that. So thank you.
Any other questions or comments about the assessment?
I have a question. I think it was a couple months ago, you all were talking about the natural resource layer, the GIS layer, and you were pulling back from using that layer. Is that correct?
We have in our work program to work on revisions to the natural resources layer.
Does this help with that process, like the sensitive, they've identified sensitive areas?
I would think so, definitely.
So we'd be able to use this in...
I think
what you were saying before was that the natural... You thought the natural resource layer might have been too vague or didn't have any standards associated with it. So would this help with that?
Yeah, I think a big part of that is what you see on aerials a lot of times is just really the foliage, the trees, and there's a lot more to natural resources than just that. And
right.
The document that the consultants prepared has a whole host of additional information that would be definitely helpful in terms of mapping.
I don't see where this could connect, I mean, in the document itself, but the LISA scores, is there any way to use this information here to help better inform the LISA scores?
I think that's a possibility. Ryan, our new planning intern, and Amelia are working on that project. We'll definitely have them focus on this document with regard to the work that they're doing. We've also reached out to some of the COZO county zoning officials, and we're trying to compare the analysis that there's a few select counties that have a land evaluation site assessment, so we're trying to get that information and do a comparison. I think this assessment will be helpful.
Any other questions, comments? So that we could go pretty far down the rabbit hole with this, but I just want to, when we take action on this, if we take positive action and make a positive recommendation to the Board of Supervisors on this, I interpret that as us saying this is an adequate fulfillment of what we set out to do with the watershed assessment, and as far as we can tell, it's professionally done and reliable information, and therefore, we recommend that the Board of Supervisors put their stamp on it and say, yep, job done, job well done. It's not my interpretation that we're doing anything else, like we're not recommending specific action based on the assessment, or it's not a plan, so we're not recommending approval of the assessment.
Or how we use the information.
Right. Would you, in the end, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think the key is keeping in mind it is that high-level beginning assessment. It was... When I met with the consultants, potential consultants, when we had the RFP out there, this was our homework before we even started doing an outline. We have definitely more information than I thought we would have. We had the wonderful, as Pat said at the joint meeting, we're recipients of other work products with which EOR has been involved. Like the Excel toolkit we have, we're able to, the two tools that we have on our website too, I did not anticipate having those when I wrote the request for proposals. So further than I thought we would be, but I think how you described it, the board's action is to accept the report.
Okay. So we're making a recommendation either to accept or not accept or some variation on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is not technically a public hearing, but I'd love to hear if any of those present from the public have any comments on the watershed assessment that they'd like to have forward along to the Board of Supervisors.
We're having difficulty hearing.
Speak up, you can.
Okay. If any members of the public would like to comment on the watershed assessment, if you wouldn't mind stepping up to the podium and just offering your comments. Okay. Then, commission, what's your action? Do you have a motion?
And the motion is to put it to the supervisors.
So we're only making a recommendation. So it would be a recommendation to accept or to send it back to the consultants or some variation on that.
Well, I'm moving passing on to them. I looked through it and looked at it pretty closely myself. I'm amazed at the way they've structured the data and come up with criteria in the way that they have. And that, you know, may not be the end all and be all with this. We've got to start with this. How else do you know where to start? On a project as big as our C2C, you have to prioritize things. You can't just be saying to your brother-in-law, you need to go apply for this. We got criteria. We got 40 kinds of soil in Iowa. There's a lot to take care of, and it can't just be, yeah, well, we'll do those for bright acres before they have those acres. You have to have a criteria, and I'm amazed, and I still don't really understand it all. But that's okay. I will get there. That this kind of document even happens.
So, BJ, your motion is to recommend that the Board of Supervisors accept the assessment.
Thank you so much. Yes.
And I second.
We have a motion by McBride, second by Sherwood. Is there any discussion on the motion? Could we have a roll call, please?
Mins.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Very good. The motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you.
Oh, honey, you're going to go to heaven over taking care of all this. No doubt in my mind.
We are going to move on to consideration of rezoning 03-18, Binco Tree and Wood Services. Jerry and Ryan have this one.
I just want to give some general background before we start into the PowerPoint presentation. This item started with our department with a renewal request. It was a home business permit application. In the county, home businesses are permitted in certain districts, primarily where there's an existing dwelling. There's limited regulations, and I'll go through some of those specifics in a little bit. But it started with the request to renew the home business permit application, which is currently an annual review. So that's how it started. We usually start our reviews with taking a look at aerial photography. When we look at aerial photography, we observed that it appeared that there was some outside storage and maybe some vehicles on site. With home businesses, two key things are there's, you're permitted to have whoever resides in the dwelling, at least one person residing in the dwelling should conduct or be a part of the business. And then you're permitted one additional individual that can be outside the family that can also work in the business. No outside storage or display is permitted either. And either, through our definition, you can either do your home business in less than half of the home square footage, or you can apply that business or operation in one detached building. So the review of the aerial prompted a letter that we wrote to the property owner, Mr. Todd Finch. Business, again, is Binco Tree and Wood Services, and asking to meet at his property to learn more about the activity. We sent that out. It was toward the end of the year. I think it was in November. And actually met in, I think it was January or February, and met with Mr. Finch for over an hour, I believe, talking about and learning about the operation. And basically what I observed from the site review were several buildings being used for the business. There were a few vehicles that were from the employees, and there were several piles, some processed, some unprocessed.
tree and branch materials. So after our visit, it ultimately involved in a letter that we wrote to the property owner, trying to explain what the requirements were for the home business permit, and trying to lay out some options. And the options included coming up with a compliance schedule. And I should add that in the county's ordinance, there are provisions that allow for the staff to go through code enforcement, if it's deemed that there is non-compliance with the requirements. But we chose to provide communication and information about options. The first thing I think that we asked or communicated was that we were asking for a compliance schedule. We indicated that one option might be to maybe add on to an existing building to allow for some of the materials to be located in the addition of the building. We talked about potentially phasing out the business at that location and going to a location that's zoned for that business elsewhere in the county or nearby for a rezoning request, and that's what ultimately was submitted by the applicant. So we'll go through the presentation. Again, the request is to rezone the property. After doing a very thorough review of our zoning regulations and our comprehensive plan, reviewing the historical records, the site information, planning staff have come up with a recommendation of denial, but we think we have a strong alternative that we're asking support from the Planning and Zoning Commission, and that is to support the renewal of the home business permit with conditions, and we'll go through specifically what that entails.
Okay, we'll get started. So the applicants are Mr. Finch and Mr. Dodge here, and the cities within 2 miles are Kelly and Ames. The districts are there to the bottom right. Okay, so the nature of the request, there's a rezoning request from the agricultural district to the commercial light industrial district, and a C2C future land use map amendment from rural residential to commercial industrial. The subject property is approximately 10 acres, and the area to be rezoned would be the south 3.5 acres, approximately the 425 feet of the south end of the subject property. The request has been submitted in order for operation of Finco Tree and Wood Services to continue at the subject property. It's currently not in compliance with the Story County Home Business Requirements, which is Chapter 89.01. So here we have the vicinity map. Let's see. Okay, so here we are is the subject property. This is Kelly, about a half mile away. And then this is Ames up here, just under 2 miles to the north. A little closer view. It has road frontage on 280th. This is our subject property. We have several homes right here. And then 290th down there. We'll zoom in just a little further to get a better idea of the property and then some of the homes here. And like I said, the south portion is what is requested to be rezoned.
And there's about 7 single-family dwellings to the east that you're looking at, and there's a single-family dwelling to the north and west about a 1 acre parcel.
Okay, so with the use of the property, there's a single-family dwelling at basically the highest point right in the middle. An accessory building with a garage is used for the office of the business in the back. One three-sided accessory building is right here, used for storage of service vehicles. And then numerous piles of processed and unprocessed wood to the back of that. We have a parking area for employees and 3 sheds kind of right in this corner for agricultural use. There are 2 gravel pads right here with electrical hookups for campers, and then two propane tanks, one used for the family dwelling and one used for the office. We have some kind of planted native grass and trees up in the northern area here, and then one septic is used for the dwelling. So, a history of the business. The existing parcel was created in 2000 through a plat of survey, and the single-family home, single-family dwelling was constructed during that time. So, zoning permit application was submitted on October 5th, 2010, requesting to construct a pole building. This request was denied on October 6th because it was concluded that the building would be used for business purposes. So, an investigation of violation was found an unpermitted business on the subject property. A notice of violation was issued on October 21st, 2010. A home business application, permit application, was submitted on the same day. Proof of compliance was reported on October 27th, 2010, and a home business permit was issued the next day on the 28th. One condition to the home business permit stated that the pole building could be constructed, but all outside storage must be stored inside. At the time, the home business permit application indicated zero estimated customer trips per day, zero estimated delivery vehicle trips per week, and the business owned 8 service vehicles and employed 3 people in addition to Mr. Finch at the time. So this is the condition here. Must have outside storage stored in accessory building. And here's the premise.
Okay, this is from Henry. Now, these are the regulations for home businesses. If you receive a home business permit, these are the standards that you're required to comply with. The ones that are highlighted are the ones that are of issue with this particular property. First one talks about the business must be a service or product-oriented activity. At least one individual residing in the dwelling shall be employed at the business. Again, if you're going to do the business in the house, it says that it cannot occur in more than half of this gross floor area. Only one accessory building may be utilized for the business. Business shall not be a nuisance to its surroundings, such as site appearance, noise, things of that nature. The only one individual not residing in the dwelling may participate or be employed at the business. Two service vehicles may be parked in areas visible from the road right away and adjoining properties in A1 district. There's also another provision that allows for vehicles, if they're not in use, they can be seen from the road right-of-way or adjacent properties in an A1 district. 8 says outside storage or display of products shall not be allowed. The business shall not create traffic or delivery concerns in the immediate area. 10 should not have a negative impact on values, property values, to surrounding properties. If there's signage, it should meet the sign code requirements. You have to adhere to parking requirements as well as any lighting standards. This is from the zoning ordinance. These next few things are. This is the A1 Agricultural District Statement of Intent. It says the intent is the district is intended and designed to accommodate land uses compatible with agriculture and to protect ag land from encroachment of urban land uses. It also references that comprehensive plan designates priority to agricultural land as agricultural conservation areas. It says that these areas are intended to preserve rural character by limiting development of most non-farm dwellings to large lots. Also talks about in an A1 district, non-farm residential development on smaller lots is supported in furtherance of the C2C comp plan plans and objectives. This is the statement of intent for commercial and industrial. Again, this is the district that is requested. It says it's intended to accommodate the full range of retail commercial services and products, wholesaling, warehousing, as well as light industrial, laboratory manufacturing, fabricating, and institutional activities in an industrial location. The intent
The intended uses are generally characterized by a minimum of obnoxious characteristics which might adversely affect surrounding development. This, these two aerials show you the current zoning. The property is outlined in red. It's actually red. Again, just south of 280th, it's a 10-acre parcel. The subject property and the surrounding land is all A1 agricultural zoned. The closest next different zoning is off to the northeast, which is A2 agribusiness. There's a co-op agricultural use to the east. The aerial to the right shows the proposed zoning change. They're not proposing to change the entire parcel, just the south, 425 feet. So that's that area that's outlined here. And it would include the existing two accessory structures. The north accessory structure, again, is used for the office. There's some space in there for vehicle storage. The building to the west is their primary building that they're using for the vehicles and trucks. They're also using it to store some of the processed firewood. Also on the south end is where the operational aspect occurs with the processing of the trees into logs and mulch. Some points from the C2C plan. The subject property is designated rural residential. It's also, however, part of the Ames River Fringe plan. The north quarter is in the Ag and Farm Service area, but again, it's outside. This designated area is outside of the rezoning area. We did, however, notify the City of Ames. City of Gilbert did not receive comment back. Development of the property into residential housing, because of that designation of rural residential, could be a possibility. I don't think it's something that is of interest to the property owner, but it's something that could potentially happen there. It's consistent with the C2C plan. Like I said, there's a little over 10 acres. But again, if that were to, you know, if that were to be considered, it would likely be difficult to do with the split zoning and existing and proposed uses that could potentially locate on the property. Surrounding land use is agricultural conservation and rural residential area. Rural residential area definition and some of the relevant principles. First of all, definition says it offers rural housing market choices in unincorporated areas of the county, typically with larger lot sizes than what you would see inside of the city. The existing residential land uses that are found in rural Story County provide a desirable housing market worthy of both protection and cultivation. Some of the relevant policies, one, ensure that new development is sensitive to the predominant rural nature of the area. Two, encourage clustering of residential sites to limit the short and long-term costs associated with infrastructure improvements and the distribution of public services. And six, encourage proposed development to take access off of existing paved roads unless minimum levels of services requirements can be addressed. Commercial industrial area definition and relevant principles. This is what the land use, C2C land use change would be to. Definition says supports long-term planning objective of accommodating future demand for types of commercial and industrial growth that may be best located in a rural setting outside of an urbanized area. A lot of what we see in Story County are the A2 agribusiness type uses, farm implement sales, anhydrous ammonia, co-ops, that type of use is fairly common. Some of the principles, it says give preference to clustering uses to limit short and long-term costs that are associated with the infrastructure improvements and distribution of public services. Two, support the commercial industrial development within incorporated areas and areas where infrastructure exists and extensions are logical. Support expansion of existing and new commercial industrial development where ag and natural resources can be preserved and protected. Four, provide adequate buffers to ag to minimize conflict. And then six is mitigate and manage stormwater runoff and erosion control. This is a map that shows you this cornerstone capstone land use map designation. So the subject property is the larger rectangle, again 10 acres, rural residential. The parcel to the northwest, which is about 1 acre, is also rural residential designated. The rest is ag and conservation. This just shows you aims over fringe, again about the north quarter, we're saying about 2.75 acres is designated ag and farm service. But again, this is outside of the proposed rezoning area, which will be to the south.
Okay, so we'll go through some pictures here to kind of get an idea of the property a little better. This is on 280th looking south into the property from the entrance. And this is looking west on 280th. And then across 280th. And then east on 280th, all from the entrance to the property. So we'll go down the drive here, and this is you know, some of the planted trees and the grass. Kind of in the background, there's kind of some planted high grass back there. And this is the camper parking with electrical hookups. This is the dwelling with the operation in the back. And then the business entrance with some, you know, wood stockpiles here and that three-sided shed right here.
Which this is just a continuation of the driveway that's off of 280th Street.
Okay, this is the business office and garage. And this is kind of standing in that employee parking area, but this is the same business office and garage. Over here is that three-sided shed, and then these three buildings are for agricultural purposes, smaller sheds. This stores their service vehicles, and then employee vehicles and parking with a little bit of the operation you can see here. And here's another look at just a small operation here, but all of the wood inventory. And then this is a good one to see. Back here, there are like the large tree trunks and logs. And then this is kind of the smaller logs cut to size, and then kind of the end firewood, each process there. So here are some of those larger tree trunks and larger logs. And then the rows of the firewood. This kind of shows both kinds of piles there. And then there's mulch as well, processed mulch. And we'll see also here, it's kind of some miscellaneous kind of wood debris, and we were concerned a little bit with some of the erosion that was occurring kind of in this area. So this is looking at the property. We're on 280th here, looking east. So this would be the three-sided shed right here and then the office. And then this is on the north-south road, 530th Ave, looking back west. So you can kind of, there's a little bit of clearing in the trees there, and you can kind of see the storage vehicles. But for the most part here on 530th, in the summertime when there are leaves on the tree and corn is being grown, it's pretty well unseen from 530th. This would most likely not be in the case, say, in the wintertime or soybeans were in, being planted.
But there is a pretty substantial buffer of natural trees along the west side of those four and then three dwellings to the east of this property.
Okay, so with the rezoning standards of approval, there's a few of these, and I'll go through each one quick. But A is the proposed rezoning shall conform to the Story County Development Plan, the CTC plan. Staff does not believe that this conforms to the C2C plan. Subject property is designated rural residential, which is intended to offer the rural housing in Story County. This provides a desirable market and is worthy of protection. The proposed rezoning will change the subject property to commercial industrial area, which supports long-term commercial industrial growth. So then B, the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent of the purpose, district, and district requirements. So the proposed use does somewhat align with the proposed rezoning that of the property. So the commercial light industrial district is intended to accommodate a full range of retail and commercial services and products, which would include tree and wood services. So, but also warehousing, manufacturing aligns with the storing and processing of logs. But as well, other allowable uses include laboratory and institutional activities. No conditions limiting the use to strictly tree and wood services were proposed. C, the proposed rezoning shall be compatible with the surrounding land uses and development patterns. The proposed rezoning is not compatible with the surrounding land use and development patterns. The subject property along with all adjacent land is zoned A1. Subject property and adjacent single-family dwelling are designated rural residential. Principle 2 of rural residential indicates clustering is important, as well as principle number 1 of the commercial industrial area. The closest area zoned commercial light industrial is approximately 2 miles away on Highway 69, and it's an evident example of spot zone. Letter D deals with a lot of environmental resources. It's not necessarily applicable here. There aren't any natural resource areas, but it should still be noted that, you know, reusing wood and planting the trees by FINCO tree and wood services is environmentally friendly. Letter E, just basically talking about the LISA score, and that the LISA score does meet the criteria which would allow a rezoning application to be submitted.
Okay, so Ryan went through the things, the criteria that we consider when reviewing the zoning change request. We also required to look at the cornerstone and capstone land use request, and these are the items that we are to consider in doing that. The first one talks about the extent to which the change would be consistent with the comprehensive plan and goals. We don't think that would be consistent with those, with the plan and the goals. The highest prioritized land use goal in the plan is to preserve and protect and plan around physical characteristics of the land. The second thing that's identified is to protect agricultural resources. There was some indication about planting of trees on the property. There's no indication of putting in any erosion control measures to provide protections to adjacent property. The property does have about a 1,000 foot long driveway, and it needs to be noted that if the property is rezoned and that rezoned area changes in use, maybe it's a lease, that it's likely that an easement for the drive would need to be provided. B talks about evidence of demonstrating the reasons why the plan should be changed, including but not limited to whether new information has been available since the comp plan was adopted that supports the reexamination. Again, we think the plan should not be changed, that there really has not been any new information that has been provided to substantiate the change. The C2C plan was adopted in June of 2016. Very thorough process, public input process, and there's no indication in the plan that this is a good location or a requested location for a commercial or industrial node. So that's one thing that should be considered. C talks about whether or not the change is needed to allow reasonable development of the site. The
development of the site has actually occurred. It started with the division of the property to the 10 acres. It was removed from the row crop production. House dwelling was constructed, then the accessory structures, and then ultimately the use of the business shortly thereafter. And again, the rezoning is not supported. We are requesting your assistance in developing conditions for the home business permit. So we'll go through that. D talks about the relationship of the proposed amendment to the supply and demand for the particular land uses within the county and immediate vicinity. Again, the tree and wood service is not identified as a targeted industry. That's identified in the economic development chapter. It talks about technology industries, renewable energy type industries, industries that have job growth, high paying jobs. We did locate similar uses as this that are inside the city. In this case, this is American Wood Products, American Tree Care. They're actually located in Eastern Ames in an industrial zoned area. It's a zoned general industrial district. This again is highlighted in red here. It's a similar use, similar business. And then the adjacent uses are also recycling type uses. In this blowout, you can see automotive recycling parts business as well. He talks about a demonstration that the proposed amendment has merit beyond the interests of the applicant. Again, we think this primarily would benefit the applicant. Finco Tree and Wind Service provides services to customers throughout the county, primarily delivers firewood also to locations throughout Central Iowa, to restaurants, to campgrounds, to process materials that they do on their property. G talks about consideration of the fiscal impact. Again, the input from the applicant is that there are no plans for growth. However, if you look at the application, I think there were 3 employees at the time. I think he indicated that it fluctuates anywhere between 4 and 6 employees, depending on the time of year. There were 7 or 8 vehicles when the application was submitted in 2010, and I think the response was that there's 15 vehicles today. So there's been some growth. There may be additional growth with this business, possibly. And then also, if other uses were to locate there, there may be some impact on the 280 street.
Okay, so we held a conceptual review on June 7th and have some comments from the interagency review team. Story County Assessor said they'd review the classification of the property for the 2019 assessment, and Story County Environmental Health Department asked if there's wastewater from either building used for the business and what method of treatment, and the response was no and none. And then some of our own questions in the Planning and Development Department with the answers provided. So 4 full-time and 2 seasonal employees are employed by Finco Tree and Woods Services. 0 employees are based from the subject property on a daily basis. 15 company vehicles are owned by Finco Tree and Woods Services. And when we were on a site review, we saw some wood stacked in the 3-sided shed. So we were wondering what the difference was between what was stacked in the shed and what was outside. So all wood is stored outside. Anything inside would be used would be in transit. And based on the review of some historical aerials, we kind of asked what growth is expected in the future, and no growth is expected. So some more questions. Is there any additional land expected to be purchased for the business, or will there be a reason to increase the area? No to both of those. And how long has the business been in existence? When did it start conducting operation on the subject property? So the tree service actually started in 1982, but has been on the property since 2000. and businesses conducted on the property all year long, and material is brought to the property for processing daily. Other than tree and wood services, ag services such as selling chickens, eggs, and pork are conducted on the subject property, but no other services will be provided in the future. And we did see that there was a sign that said Finch's Corner Private Campground, and you know, the camping spot with the electrical hookups. So we asked kind of what that was for, and it said for storage for a personal camper. We asked if there was erosion control and landscape buffering planned between the proposed subject rezoning and the adjacent properties, and there was the answer that was no. So then, and then finally, some information we provided that notices would be sent to Kelly, Ames, and Gilbert. And if the rezoning did occur and somehow changed ownership, an easement would most likely be required to access the rezoned area from 280th Street. There were comments from the public. Notice letters were sent to property owners within a quarter mile of the proposed rezoning and to the city of Ames, Gilbert, and Kelly on June 28th. A notice was also published in the papers designated by the Board of Supervisors on the same day. The cities did not respond at the time of the staff report. And planning and development staff received a comment in support of the rezoning request directly from the property owner to the west of the subject property. And then that same individual, along with 11 other property owners and a business as well, signed a document in support of the request. Most are within close proximity to the subject property.
That brings us to the recommendation. As I mentioned, when I started, our department is recommending denial of the rezoning request from A1 Agricultural District to Commercial Light Industrial, and the C2C map amendment from Rural Residential to Commercial Industrial Area for the following. Again, this is a rezoning request that benefits the property owner primarily. Change in the zoning district will create an area that will allow for future incompatible land uses. Again, based on our comprehensive plan, new and commercial industrial uses should be encouraged inside incorporated areas where appropriately zoned. Also, there's mention of clustering uses to prioritize and limit infrastructure costs and negative impacts that could potentially occur. We have a comment about the processing of the three issues that exist on the site, the processing, the storage, the outdoor storage is the, you know, primary nuisance-laden type activity. So I think it got our attention. We're concerned also, too, about the precedent that may be set causing a shift. Again, there's no designated planned commercial node in this particular area. There's no input from the citizens. If that's something that's encouraged or supported, in fact, there's comments about smaller communities in the county need business growth, so that should be encouraged. And then also we're concerned about if the rezoning is approved, then potentially other businesses that have home business permits that are not in compliance will request and seek this avenue to get support. So instead of the rezoning request, we are asking the Planning and Zoning Commission to support the renewal of the home business permit application with conditions. We set out to identify what we think are reasonable conditions. We are open to input from the Planning and Zoning Commission, open for input from the applicant. There's four things. The first thing talks about the applicant being allowed to bring in trees and the branches to the site. Again, this is something that apparently occurs on a daily basis through 2018.
And then after that time, after the materials are brought in, he can draw from the existing stockpiles to be sold to customers. Three talks about the number of employees can continue. We think there's some comparisons that can be made in a rural setting with farm hands, farm help, agricultural assistance. And then the last one talks about be allowed to continue use of the two buildings. The buildings really are similar in design and are very similar to what you would see in an agricultural or a rural setting. So with that, brings us to the recommendation, which is a denial of the rezoning request from agricultural district to commercial light industrial. It's also denial of the C2C plan amendment from rural residential to commercial industrial. The case is rezoning 03-18. And again, we're asking for support of the home business permit with conditions. For that, we will be happy to answer your questions.
So let me unpack the actions we need to take just a little bit. Correct me if I'm wrong. So we have to act on the application, which is bundled together, an application for amendment of the zoning ordinance, zoning map, and the county development plan designation, C2C plan designation. And then also you're asking for support, comments, whatever, on how you can package up the home business permit so it's acceptable. But correct me if I'm wrong, ultimately the home business permit is an administrative decision, is that correct?
Normally it is.
If you went ahead and made a decision on that and the applicant decided to challenge the administrator's decision, would that come back to us or would it go straight to the Board of Adjustment?
Yeah, our hope in bringing this as an option is we would like the Planning and Zoning Commission to weigh in on it and make a recommendation that we would take to the Board of Supervisors. We would prepare a document that we would ask the Board of Supervisors to take action on, and that document would be recorded, and that's what would help the applicant make decisions going forward with the operation of his business.
I see. So you're going to go a step beyond the usual home business permit process and take it to the Board of Supervisors.
Right. I think that's part of the concern, that it's, that the administrative element be removed from this. Like I said, we looked at this very, very close, and it came out through our review and multiple discussions, and we think it's the best option available for the applicant. It allows the applicant to continue. He's been there since 2000. It allows him to continue operating his business in this environment. There are some folks here today that have comments. As Ryan mentioned, we received, I think, one email and then a form letter with 10 signed in support of the business being at that location. So we're trying to come up with a solution that gives support with reasonable conditions.
Okay. The first course of action is the rezoning and amendment to the CTC plan. Questions for the staff?
I heard the nuisance a couple times. Did they get complaints?
It started with a renewal of a home business permit application.
But no complaints from the neighbors or anybody?
Not that I'm aware of.
And can you go back to the previous slide? I was confused about something. Could you read number one, please?
Number one says, allow applicant to bring tree trunks and tree branches on site to be processed through 2018. Beyond the state, no additional tree processing may occur on site.
So basically shutting down the business after 2018?
As far as this is part of the business, is processing. They provide service to the private sector, to governmental entities, clearing trees from electrical lines, trails. They take that material and bring it back and process it and sell it to...
Yeah, we got that.
That's good. Yeah.
That's just one component of it.
But this says...
It says after that date, no more processing, no more...
Applicant may continue selling existing stockpiles of processed trees until depleted.
You're out of business after it's depleted.
No, because that's only a part of what the business is.
Service
but that part's ended.
And we're asking that part of it to be relocated to a location that's zoned for that use.
Oh, okay.
But they started there. The business is at that site. It's not real easy just for you or I just to pick up our business and move it to someplace else.
I was assuming that all the trees will be gone, all the wood will be gone by then, I guess.
Well, and he would have 6 months to bring in as much material to process. So again, our understanding is that these logs are sold to campgrounds, to restaurants. It's a component of, it's not the business, it's a component of the business.
But that component, like Twin Acres or any of the campgrounds, can't get firewood 2 years from now from them, right?
But again, this is a home business.
Yeah.
You are not permitted to have outside storage.
So they're saying he needs to relocate after he's got all the... existing stuff. So
was this ever in compliance or did the field change with the C2C program?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
I thought so. He's apparently been doing it since 2000. It came to our department's attention in 2010. And because a building permit was submitted for an accessory structure,
okay.
And it was determined that it was for a business to invest, and Ryan went through that, it was denied. And then it was determined, because we had the same provisions at the time, that this would be a good candidate for home business. But again, when you sign the document here, it's indicating that you're going to meet these requirements. So
right.
I don't know. I came in 2015. It came up as a renewal. Like I said, we start our process with a review of aerial photography. If we see something, you know, we act on it.
When it came up for renewal, is that a yearly thing or has things, because somebody was signing off on this if it wasn't a complaint?
It's a yearly.
I don't really want an answer to that.
It's a yearly review.
So they've been in compliance before. Somebody signed off on their permit.
But you're not going to have the aerial imagery every year.
No, that's, I'm just, you know.
No, I'm not signed.
So
I'm just asking.
So new information will come to light, with new aerial imagery, which happens every few years.
And I'm sorry. When was the CTC plan adopted?
2016.
Are there any provisions in this? Are there any provisions in there for what we call grandfathering in businesses that have been there for a long time?
I think the way to look at it is when you want to do something, you have, you know, the goal is to meet the current standards of the time and indicating these. I mean, the business started in 1982, but at this location it was 2000. So in 2000, those provisions that we went through, they were in effect. So. In an A1 district, if you're going to do a home business, these are the things that you are required to comply with.
It's not the C2C plan, it's the provision, excuse me.
Zoning ordinance.
The zoning provision.
There was not a change of regulation that threw the property into nonconformity.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
So somebody signed the renewal every year, correct?
You know, to be honest with you, I don't know that we have a renewal for every year, right? Do you weigh in on that? Do you remember seeing a renewal for 2011, 12, 13?
There were renewals, but it would, you know, it would start at 2010 mm-hmm. when it was first observed.
What do we have for every year?
But from 2000,
between
2010,
there was nothing. No.
You don't have a staff actively reviewing all the home business permits and going out annually and saying, are you still in business? Are you still?
No, we review because we have to, you know, try to ensure that they're meeting their requirements.
And so when did that start? Just a year or two ago that you were reviewing them?
Well, it's been in the ordinance that it's an annual review.
Okay.
Right, but since I've been here since August of 2015, we do the review.
Since 2015, okay. And possibly before, but you weren't here.
Right.
Well, is it the burden of the county to make sure that people are in compliance, or is it the business owner's burden to be in compliance?
Is that a question?
No. I mean, it seems to me when the information comes to light.
Yeah, there are provisions that talk about permits and development applications that it's really the onus is on the property owner. But on the same token, we do try to work with people.
You know. Well, we can see that here that you're trying to do that.
Because not everybody is aware of requirements, and the goal today is to try to find a compromise that works,
yeah, good,
and that's reasonable, and that's really all we're trying to do. Because we don't think rezoning is the answer. It's not something that was planned. We're concerned about long-term impacts of that, and we think we have a vehicle that's very logical and that can work. Just got to get to what those conditions are.
I have a couple of questions about the business, the home business, and the conditions that you're putting on there. How does that change the home business from what is written in the legislation or the law? It seems like you're changing the number of employees that will be on the property. You're changing the number of buildings. You're changing the number of vehicles that will be allowed. How would that change? How would that affect other applicants that come for a home business and they say, well, so-and-so has more vehicles and so-and-so has.
Right. And I think, again, the reason why this is even being offered is because of the rezoning request that was submitted and the fact that we have this outstanding home business permit. And, again, we think that this is a reasonable approach. Again, I think we do support the number of employees. He is in somewhat of a rural area. If there's an active farm, there's going to be more than one person working the farm. The buildings really compare to buildings that you would see in a rural or agricultural setting, so they do blend in. The biggest concern we have, I think, is with the storage of the material. And we're trying to figure out a way that's best to deal with that.
So do you want the wood inside a building?
That was one of the things that we suggested. And from our site review, it looks like they do store some of the product inside the building.
But all this stuff is transitory. It's going out. As much as it's coming in, I mean, that's the point of their business, I'm guessing, that it's going out.
So practically what you're saying is you're recommending allowing it through 2018.
To bring in new material to be processed. Mm-hmm.
So the business as is, you will allow through 2018 and would expect the owner, give the owner the time to phase out of this site and move this part of the operation somewhere else.
We're just primarily talking about the processed materials that he's selling. Because again, they have large trucks, they have, hoist to do trimming. I don't know that they climb trees, but they have equipment to help them rise to the level to do the trimming and whatnot.
Well,
I think that's their primary service
that
they provide. And then so they have this material that they work on and they bring it back to the site and process it and sell it, which is a great use. It's something that we want to support. We don't want this material in the landfill, so it's a great alternative that would be reused and repurposed.
But the word no really keeps standing out for it. No additional tree processing may occur on the site after 2018.
And like I said, we're open to input from the Planning and Zoning Commission.
What are the other parts?
Because I'm saying that to me this is the death of this. Maybe that works for them.
Amending the agricultural zone.
Can I break in and say, unless we have questions meant to clarify the staff report or the information in the staff report at this point, then we should move on to hearing from the applicant and the public on this.
Yeah.
And we can discuss and come to conclusions afterward. So would anyone, the applicant or anyone representing the applicant, like to step up to the podium and speak? And if we could have your name and business address for the record, please. Thank you.
You bet. Justin Dodge, Hunsaker Companies, 105 South 16th Street. I actually ran out to the site over lunch today and took some pictures and printed those off. And so I'd like to share those with you guys. So
that way everyone knows exactly what we're talking about. Even though they have them in the staff report, I appreciated that. Thank you, Ryan.
Are they all the same or different?
They're different. I took several and then...
Oh, sorry.
I was trying to get better photos. But anyway, they're all showing exactly
what we're talking about and what Todd's property looks like.
And how do you represent the applicant?
So where our affiliation comes in with Todd is back in the day, Herb Hunsaker helped Todd get started in 1982. So he has been providing services for us for the last 36 years. And so when this came about, Todd was pretty worked up because honestly he felt as though his business was being threatened. And so was getting very emotional, and I mean, this is his baby. He's been running this for 36 years. So it's better that we keep him on a job site and keep him and the crews working and let me come to a meeting like this to represent him.
He requested that you represent him here tonight?
Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you. First and foremost, I would like to thank Jerry and Ethan for spending a lot of time with us. I can't really think we've had a few face-to-face meetings and then conceptual reviews, and Jerry and I have had several email exchanges and lots of phone calls. So appreciate all the efforts of staff trying to work to find a solution for Todd. So as I said, Todd's been running this business since 1982. In 2000, his dad split this parcel off so that way he could build a dwelling and run the business out of there. The business has been run out of there since 2000. If you could, Ryan, could you flip back to the screen that shows the 2010 dates? And so one of the things I really want to highlight in the slide is back in 2010, and I believe Sheena was Jerry's predecessor that Todd was working with back then, when they went in to construct the pole building, that's when they realized, hey, you know, you're running a business out of this location. You really need to get in compliance with Story County's regulations. He had no idea that he was out of compliance. But if you look at the dates, he was first notified. Okay, so October 5 was when they tried to build the pole building. And then he jumped through all these hoops all within 23 days. So obviously Todd wants to work with the county. He wants to be in compliance. And even in 2010, I think you guys had another slide that talked about the number of employees in the building. So it's my understanding that in 2010, when he went in, or when he was visiting with Sheena, she wanted that second building and to house the trucks. She was viewing the trucks as the outdoor storage and wanted those trucks stored inside. So all of a sudden in 2010, when it was approved, oh, not this one, the one from 2010 that said three employees. So even in 2010, which were the same regulations for the home business, he had two buildings and he had three employees. So technically, he wasn't even in compliance with the county's rules then, but they were trying to work with him. So he's been working with the county and trying to continue to run his business on this site. As I said, Todd's been doing this for 36 years, and he doesn't have a whole lot of years before retirement. And so his goal is to be able to run his business on the site until he chooses to retire, you know, say 2030 or something like that. I think it's important to note that out of the last 18 years, there have been zero complaints. Todd's been a great neighbor. And as a result, 13 of his neighbors signed a form saying, we're in support of this rezoning. And the only reason that they're asking for the rezoning was from a meeting with Ethan and Jerry, where we went through some different options, and it seemed like rezoning was the only way to be able to keep Todd at his home and to keep operating the business until retirement. So that's why he's asking for rezoning. So anyway, that's the gist of Todd's request and the rationale and the reason why. Well, like I said, it's his wishes to maintain his business until he retires at this location. So like I said, he doesn't have a whole lot of years left. But thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any members of the public who'd like to comment on this application in any way? So please step up to the podium, and if we could have your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Gretchen Northrup, and my husband Tom and I have an acreage that borders to the east edge of Todd's operation. Excuse me. I would say that Todd has been a good neighbor. Our only concern is that since 2000, when he started that business, that pile of wood in the back is very, very large. So I think I would approve of you limiting the amount of material that's brought in after 2018. As you mentioned, we have a pretty good wall between our acreage and his because of large cottonwood trees in the summer with the leaves on, but in the winter, that's all we see when we look out the west windows is a huge. That also can be a problem with animals that burrow into wood. So, but I think generally Todd has been a pretty good neighbor. It's just the size of the operation that has changed in the last, I'd say, probably 10 years.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak on the issue?
Thank you. Good evening. Ethan Anderson with the Story County Attorney's Office, as identified by Justin back there, is working with Jerry in addressing this issue. And so I've got two comments. I think it's appropriate to support or rather deny the rezoning. I think that's clear. We initially identified that as an option, but as Jerry's looked thoroughly into it and Ryan's looked into it, it is appropriate, I think, to deny that. I would submit, though, that it is also appropriate to support the renewal of the home business permit with conditions. And I've sensed from some of the questions from some of the commissioners here that they recognize that this property and this use of the property has a rather complicated history. That complicated history is too much to go into tonight, but we have had several face-to-face meetings. And to say that I have some sympathy for the situation Todd finds himself in is accurate. I have some sympathy for the fact that he may feel that the goalposts have moved on him over time. I'm sympathetic to that. That being said, we still have the ordinances. He needs to follow those. I think renewing the home business permit with a sunset provision is an appropriate compromise. I would recommend, though, that 2018 seems to be rather maybe too punitive to his business. I would submit in our meetings, he suggested he wants to retire there and then wind up the business and still live there. So it would be appropriate, I think, to recommend to the Board of Supervisors some type of sunset provision. I don't know if it's 2028 or 2025 or 2030, but whatever the commission feels appropriate, I'm sure to make that you can make that recommendation to the board. The second comment I'd like to make is picking up on some of the commissioner's questions on potentially frustration and lack of enforcement over the years. And again, we're not going to speculate on that. We don't need to comment on that. I'm kind of the same vintage as Jerry. I did criminal prosecution up until 2015 when I switched to the civil docket. So I've been doing this civil stuff for approximately the past 3 years. I would say that Jerry and I typically agree on most things. We do have one disagreement, though, here. Now, the disagreement is I think there's an alternative solution that wasn't mentioned. I think this alternative solution is in Chapter 92.04, and it's the waiver. This waiver recognizes that there's situations where strict compliance with the code would result in extraordinary hardship. So I think the extraordinary hardship to Todd would be shutting down his business. So I think a waiver would be, and I don't want to muddy the waters for everybody here, but I think a waiver is another potential alternative solution. And I know Jerry and I have had discussions about it, and ultimately he didn't feel appropriate bringing that to the commission tonight. But I think legally I would support the waiver under 92.04 so that substantial justice may be done and the public interest secured. Now, I know it's a different process Jerry had to go through to support the waiver, but that's an alternative you could recommend to the Board of Supervisors. So I think there's two options here. There's the probably the simplest, easiest option is to support the renewal of the home business permit with conditions. Conditions that Todd can live with and that the county can live with. The second option is to recommend to the Board of Supervisors that a waiver process be investigated. I think those are my comments. Thank you.
Ethan, is it?
Yes.
Can you comment on the appropriateness of using of the home business, asking the Planning Commission and then the Board of Supervisors to comment in this order, to recommend in this order on the home business permit, which is usually an administrative act done by the zoning administrator?
Yeah, Jerry and I had some discussion of that. We think it's appropriate to take to the Board of Supervisors to provide clarity in this unusual circumstance to the owner of the property, Todd Finch. As I said, I didn't allude to a lot of the history, but he may have felt that the goalposts had been moved on him throughout the past year. I think he is seeking to work with the county and get some kind of clarity and a definitive statement in writing that he can clutch onto. And I think that would be the motion or the resolution or action taken by the Board of Supervisors approving this home business permit with conditions.
Any other questions?
Would you be willing to provide some language for a motion regarding the waiver?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jerry and I had discussions on Monday about that. I know there was discussions last week, and language was prepared. So there is language there out there. We'd have to discuss that. I don't know.
Again, it's not something that our department supports. Again, it's not something that our department supports. It's, look at the provision in Chapter 92. It's for proposed development, and it basically references the variance appeal process due to hardship, due to topography or other conditions. And there's tests that you have to be able to meet due to hardship. And we don't think that this particular situation, the scenario here, can meet the test.
While we continue our conversation, could you please hold up that paragraph and maybe read that to us here in a moment? I would tend to agree with you, Jerry. I think it's misapplying a provision that's intended for a specific purpose. But
you're talking about waiver?
Yes, please. Any other questions? Thank you. Any other comments? Hearing none. You ready? Do you have that at your fingertips there?
So do you read it?
How long is it?
There's seven paragraphs.
Can you just read the introductory paragraph?
Right? And then it references really the variance appeal process. Okay. It says where waivers by the Board of Supervisors, where in the case of a particular proposed development, it can be shown that strict compliance with the requirements of the ordinance results in extraordinary hardship to the applicant because of unusual topography or other conditions, the Board of Supervisors, upon recommendation by the Commission, may waive the requirements so that substantial justice may be done and the public interest secured, provided, however, that such waiver will not have the effect of nullifying the intent and purpose of the ordinance. And it goes on, it references...
What kind of chapter is that in?
It's chapter 92.04.
And what's 92.04 titled?
The waiver by Board of Supervisors, the chapter title is Land Development Regulations Administration.
Okay. So when I think of a waiver, that particular waiver. We've used it in the past to waiver from the maximum length of a dead-end street or a cul-de-sac or the width of a street or particular development-oriented things. We're not talking in this case about a new development of the property, at least as I would define it. But.
And again, it draws you to chapter name 2.03. D is in, it's actually 4D1. Finding of unnecessary hardship, the land in question cannot yield a reasonable return if used only for a purpose allowed in that zone. The plight of the owner is due to unique circumstances and not to general conditions in the neighborhood, which may reflect the unreasonableness of the ordinance itself. The use to be authorized by the variance will not alter the essential character of the locality. B says granting the variance will not be contrary to the public interest.
Okay.
And then C references the C2C plan development regulations. And again, I've got all the respect in the world for Ethan and the county attorney's department. I didn't want to bring up the waiver because initially we were going down that road. We thought it was an avenue that could be explored. After looking into this further, we thought that the best approach would be the conditions of the...
If waiver is a consideration, every time we have an applicant who, through good intention or bad intention, ended up in nonconformity with regulations, then what do our regulations mean? So that's the challenge I see here. I actually would love to see the home business standards expanded, but I don't want to just grant exceptions to anybody who doesn't follow the home business standards. I mean, if we want to change policy, then let's change policy and let's do it the right way. But my opinion is, we're not a legislative body. We're not supposed to be making legislation. And in essence, we're doing that here. If we grant a home business permit, which I'm not even sure we're authorized to do, make a recommendation on a home business permit. I don't think that's what the code says procedurally. And then grant an exception to every single component of the home business regulations. The number of buildings used, the outdoor storage of materials, the number of employees that start from the site. I have a lot of empathy for the property owner and business owner. I know how hard it is out there financially, especially if you have to go lease commercial and industrial property to run a business. But I'm not sure we're doing justice by allowing that to happen with this business owner when there are other tree services all over the county that have to pay to dispose of that wood at a site that is properly zoned.
You know, again, this all started with the renewal request. That's why, in us reviewing it, we did provide some options, which did include the rezoning. We work with people a lot. We work with property owners a lot. And, try to do conditions. Had to submit like a compliance schedule. We have the authority to send a notice of violation right away when we think there's a violation. We don't do that. We try to get the information from people. We try to learn about their story. And again, if we can see that there's compliance, we work with them. We try to do the best that we can to work with them and give them time to comply. So in essence, I think that's what the approach is here. But because the rezoning is before you, because we have this outstanding home business permit, we're asking for just input. And again, like Ethan said, the property owner is looking for something solid that he can hang his hat on at the end of the day and not have to worry about this in another year or 2 years or 5 years. And again, we were thinking that this is the most reasonable approach to accomplish that. And if we get some input from the Planning and Zoning Commission, take that to the Board of Supervisors. If they approve it, it gets recorded. That's what the standards are. This is what the property owner will need to comply with.
Right.
And again, I think that's what he's after.
Jerry, looking at that map, I have a question. Far upper right corner, what did you say that was?
Northeast is like a grain elevator, like a co-op type. It's A2 business, agro business. Is that what you're talking about?
So we've already got a business operation in that area.
A2 agribusiness.
Okay. Are there any other businesses around there?
Not that I'm aware of. There's probably some within the city of Kelly, which is about a half mile to the west.
Okay. But yeah, I was wondering about that. It's a grain elevator. It's not a residential.
But the nearest commercial industrial is 2 miles.
Yeah, there's a commercial node on Highway 69 southeast of the site, about, is it 2 miles? About 2 miles away.
I would be happy if you would just extend that second provision there, give them longer than the end of 2018. I just feel that, although I seem like a reasonable amount of time, I still think it would be okay to extend that a year or two or whatever could be come up with, because I have heard the word compromise. Mm-hmm. And I am concerned also about, you can't, if you make exceptions for every rule, then you don't have any rules.
I wonder if we could address the rezoning first. Let's get that out of the way so that we know it's even necessary to have the conversation about the home business permit. Take that any further.
And the objection to the rezoning is spot zoning.
Essentially, yeah.
That's why I asked about the co-op.
Which is also why it's accompanied by an amendment to the county plan, because if the zoning is just put there in a spot without matching up with the plan, then...
And even though that co-op is up there, it does seem like the primary way that area is going is residential.
That's what the plan says.
The plan says, and that's what's... When was the last house built there?
To the east. You talking about the houses to the east?
The houses around there. When was the last one built?
I don't know. That was the divider.
I think fairly recent.
In the 2000s? So there is residential development actually going on there, which means that that may seem like it's an appropriate designation for the area.
There's a sign in the picture, too. There's a sign in the picture.
I didn't know what that meant. I saw it, but I didn't know what it meant.
Also to the west, there's a timber.
This stuff. To the northeast.
The Lomans, yes.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Yes. There's a little rural residential node.
We approved the Lawrence 4th subdivision, 3-lot subdivision, if you recall that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah,
Chair. In the sake of time, I'm going to make a motion to deny this rezoning request.
All right, we have a motion for denial and keeping the staff's recommendation on the rezoning and the C2C amendment. Is there a second?
Second.
So a motion by Cable and a second by Merkin. Is there any discussion on the motion? Could we get a vote, please? Roll call vote, please.
Mins.
Yes.
Keel.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
Okay, so we have forwarded on a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors in keeping with the staff's recommendation to deny the rezoning and the CTC amendment. Now we have to deal with the issue of the home business permit with conditions.
Justin indicated that the applicant is interested in rezoning, but he did not weigh in on the conditions. Can we ask him if there's any input on that?
Sure, absolutely. Specifically on the issue of the conditions that the staff has recommended be applied to a renewing the home business permit. Do you have any thoughts?
Absolutely. You know, when looking at the four conditions that Jerry has listed out, if we could extend that 2018 year that's given everybody a lot of heartache until Todd's basically retired in, say, 2030, when he sells the business off and then continues to live on the acreage,
simple thoughts anyway. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So there's a slide with the proposed conditions by the staff.
I'm going to make a motion to accept staff's alternatives to the rezoning.
We have a motion by Cable. Is there a second? Looks like the motion fails for lack of a second. Is there another motion or some additional discussion?
I would move that we recommend staff's alternatives with the amendment of number one to change 2018 to 2025.
Is there a second to that motion? Motion fails for lack of a second.
No, I'm still reading it.
Okay.
I'm thinking it in my head.
All right.
Should I read them again?
No, I'm
no, reading.
I'm trying to the dates, how the trees are coming in, and
I would like to see a matrix showing how this differs from the current legislation. In terms of the number of buildings, in comparison.
So you want to know what the current standards are?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, you can operate in a house up to 50, just less than 50% of the square footage of the house, or you have one building.
Okay.
No on-site storage. Somebody that lives in the dwelling has to be a part of the business, and you get one employee that doesn't reside.
So we're changing that substantially here.
Well, again, you know, one to two buildings. If you look at the actual application,
That was submitted for this home business,
it indicated three employees. So he generally has four. I think during busy times he has six. So that got approved with three plus the owner.
Is there a square footage limitation to the building?
No.
It's just one building. So, I mean, another problem I have with these conditions is that it limits the use of what he can do. Where really, we have no interest in whether he's doing tree processing or not. Our interest is in whether the product is stored outside and how many accessory buildings are being used, correct?
Right.
If he wanted to build a gigantic pole barn, one, and process trees to his heart's content inside that building and store it inside that building, he could do that, correct?
Could potentially work.
So there is a solution if operating a home business under the current regulations is the end goal.
Right. I can tell you that he would like to continue doing it as what you saw.
Everyone would like to continue doing it.
I'll second this motion.
No.
Okay, I think that motion failed for lack of a second. If you'd like to make the same motion again, and search for a second.
I would like to get something.
You have something?
I'm thinking about really how much is involved in getting a business like that with the pictures that we looked at all tidied up by the end of 2018. I don't think that's reasonable. I don't think going into 2023 or 25, I think that's unreasonable. So,
do you have a motion, PJ?
Jerry's having a heart attack.
Well, we're asking him to do away with his business. We're just asking him.
Yeah, this is just bringing new used material to be processed. And once it's brought in, they can use it for as long as they can until it's depleted.
But where are they going to process it at?
Location.
Demand's form?
Well, let me tell you something. I have a business of my own. And if I brought my backhoe and my plumbing trucks and my pipe and stack it out on my 10 acres, I think my neighbors would have a fit, and I wouldn't be in compliance with the city, with the county ordinances. I know this gentleman personally, and he's a good guy. I understand that. But, you know, we have regulations for a reason. And I feel for the guy, but I'm in the same boat as he is. I had to go to town and buy an acre and a half of industrial in Ames, and that wasn't cheap. So I think it's fair what the staff is recommending. I think it's fair. He's still going to be able to sell his product. He just can't bring new raw material into that site
after the end of 2018. So during the 6-month period, he can acquire as much material as he can get to process. And then once it's depleted, then that part of it should go to the locations.
Have we made a motion to accept staff? Alternative as a
That motion was made. Okay.
You made it.
Yeah.
You can do it again.
I'll make a motion that we try to accept the staff alternatives again.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Sherwood and a second by Cable. Can we get any discussion on the motion? Roll call vote, please.
Bergen.
No.
Cable.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Mins.
No.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Motion carries. So that is a recommendation that you'll carry on to the Board of Supervisors, and we'll go from there.
Thank you.
All right. Then we are on to the discussion of the draft traffic impact analysis. Emily.
Okay. This draft traffic impact analysis and study ordinance has been for you a couple of times, I believe. So I just want to reiterate that this came from the 2018 Starr County Planning and Development Work Program that was assigned by the Planning and Zoning Commission as well as the Board of Supervisors. So we reviewed several ordinances from nearby and then across the country and have come up with this draft. Since the last time you saw this, we have routed it to the interagency review team, the same team, the county departments that we route to for subdivisions, for conditional use permits, rezonings, all the cases we do. And then also we reached out to local private practice engineers, builders, and representatives from all cities within Story County to give them an opportunity to provide feedback on what this ordinance would, how it would impact them, I guess, if they had any suggestions as we went forward. I will get to those momentarily. I just want to start by explaining to you the changes that we made prior to routing that to the outside world. So the first item we did was clarify language addressing the timing of the submittal. We had language about submitting for residential subdivisions during conceptual review. However, we didn't have language about submitting for commercial development. So that would be required to be submitted with the zoning permit. And that's for the traffic impact analysis, that brief overview of the impacts.
Could you tell us where the changes are?
Sure, yep. So the change is under number 2, administration, and that's letter A. Just specifies that commercial or industrial development should submit a traffic impact analysis with the zoning permit application. And then for major residential subdivisions, we do go through conceptual review process for those, and so that would be the time to submit. Okay. The traffic impact study, we discussed
this a little bit, back and forth, quite a bit actually, whether or not the traffic impact study should be required unless waived, or if it should be determined whether or not it would be required. We felt that putting that decision on the Board of Supervisors and the county engineer was maybe a little bit unfair to say, are you going to require it? So what we've done is changed the language to make it required for everyone. And then if it's deemed not necessary, they can waive the requirement. Does that make sense? Any questions on that? And so that was changed throughout the ordinance. Specifically, let's see, number four. So, Under administration again. Well, we did change language throughout to say that it's required for all submittals, but we added something under administration saying that the county engineer and the county board of supervisors have the authority to waive the traffic impact study, either limited or complete, if deemed appropriate, following the review of the analysis that would have already been submitted. Previously, we had a limited traffic impact study required when a proposed project would generate 100 vehicle trips during peak hours. That's quite a bit of traffic from what we normally see for development in the county. So we changed that to 100 vehicle trips per day. And so that's, I guess, requiring the study for fewer trips.
Pretty common or consistent with what we get is the four lot and less subdivision. So if you look at the standards of, depending on how many people in the household, a maximum of six trips per person, it's going to probably take a lot to get to that 100 trips.
We switched that from the number of trips during a peak hour to the number of trips for the entire day. Any questions on that one? And that comes in under number 4A and then also 4B, that first section there. Do you have any questions on that?
100 new vehicle trips per day, can we assume that we have some data on every existing road as to what is current?
Yeah.
So that we can determine what's new?
Not every. We do ask for the current average daily trips in our... the existing street conditions of nearby.
Okay.
For the analysis, and then the number, the average daily trips for adjacent.
Okay, so we're not setting a specific data source for the existing conditions. We're asking the applicant to assess the existing conditions and then determine the new. Okay.
Is that all?
I'm sorry?
I have a question if you're done.
Yep.
Going back to page 2 of 5 under administration, the new, the waiver is deemed appropriate. That, I think having a waiver is good, but if deemed appropriate seems pretty vague to me. What do you have in mind there?
I guess the intent there was following the traffic impact analysis, that brief overview that everyone would be required to submit with their application, If it's deemed unnecessary to get further information, that would be when the waiver is appropriate.
We want to yield to the individual in the county who has probably the most expertise when it comes to traffic and transportation. That would be the county engineer.
Okay. And the board of supervisors, not engineer or board of supervisors. It's both. Okay. That
could be either or.
No, it says and, not and or.
I'm sorry, I'm lost. Will you tell me where you're at?
Page 2 of 5, okay. Under 2H. It's just above the bottom, about an inch.
Yep, gotcha.
It says the Story County engineer and the Story County Board of Supervisors have the authority to waive. And my point would be that the engineer does have the expertise.
Correct.
And the Board of Supervisors may or may not. So, and I was seeing that it's and. When I saw the and, I went, okay, but then you said and or. And I'm not sure.
I said or, but I shouldn't have.
Okay.
Can I take that back?
Your excuse. Yes. Yes, you are. I'm fine.
Any other questions on those major changes that we've already made? So as I said, we did route this to the interagency review team. We did get a chance to sit down individually with both Darren, the county engineer, and then Tyler, his assistant engineer. And overall, I really support this ordinance. I think having this information right up front will be very beneficial in the review process and help us to anticipate the impacts of development moving forward. One of the things that they really liked about it was the ability to be able to waive it. Once in a while, there's a major subdivision that only is creating one lot just because of the state subdivision regulations. So sometimes it's not necessary to do a full-out study for one new dwelling, for example.
And on the same hand, if we have maybe four or five similar cumulatively, then it may press the need.
There's a different territory if you're down there by Collins and South Colo versus if you're up here, you know, you put five houses down there in Collins, you might get 10 centrists and maybe and five new houses.
Right. Yep, it has to do with
that'd be very good to waive. Mm-hmm. Need to waive it.
The other thing they appreciate is the flexibility of the ordinance that we've included, specifically under the complete traffic impact study, which is 4B. We open up the option to require the complete traffic impact study where there's current traffic issues, where there's been accidents or congested intersections that would be directly impacted by the proposed development. So that gives a little wiggle room depending on the unique circumstances. It seems like we run into unique circumstances a lot that we can't predict. So that gives a little bit of flexibility there, and they appreciated that. We also routed it to, like I said, all of the cities in Story County. We did hear back from the city of Ames, the planning and housing director, Kelly Diekman. He said they didn't have any official comments at this time, and that they think that although there's a quarter-mile radius requirement for the study, that can be changed by the county depending on unique circumstances, which he thought was very important with the broad roadway network to ensure that major intersections would be addressed. So if there's a major intersection 0.26 miles from the proposed development, that could be included as well. Does that make sense? And finally, we did also receive, like I said, we sent it to private engineers and the Builders Association. We did receive comments from Brian Wilhelm, who's an engineer with Snyder and Associates. He just started working for Snyder, and prior to that, he was working for the city of Des Moines, where they implemented a traffic impact ordinance such as this. So he had some very valuable feedback. One of the things he said was what they did, instead of saying everyone's required to submit a traffic impact analysis, they required an application. So what that was just submitted with all of the other applications, it still indicated the same information as we're asking for. It just kind of took out the confusion of analysis versus study, which is something we've discussed as well. So we thought that was good and definitely something we may consider. The second item is that there's quite a cost in for the applicant in doing the traffic modeling. So he suggested that having perhaps like trips or fewer than 50 trips would not require the traffic modeling portion, which is the level of service requirement. So I don't know what we're going to do there, but that is something they talked to developers in the area about, and 50 was the number they landed on as being important to those level of service analysis. Over 50 would be important, under 50 maybe not so important, and maybe not worth the cost. Again, these are just his suggestions. We have not implemented any of these things yet. He's considered specifying traffic modeling software that we would allow. This is something that I would need to talk to him more about and find out more information on. And then when future projected level of service is requested, consider specifying the design year you're looking for. So when we're asking for projected level of service, he suggested saying, for example, 20 years into the future. And that's something else we could take a look at. And then number five is to consider adding a crash analysis to all levels of study. We do get to this a little bit in the complete traffic impact study, but I think his recommendation is adding this to all levels of analysis, looking at previous accidents in the area, why they were caused, and to see if adding additional traffic would be a detriment to the safety of the citizens. So again, we are, and we'll take any input you have on those suggestions, but we are going to consider those and talk with Brian and to get some more input from him since he just went through this process.
We are very pleased to get the input that he provided. And very happy that he's, you know, he went through this at the city of Des Moines. So he's a very good resource for this.
With that, I'll take any questions or comments you have.
So he does have an interest, though, right? As a private consulting engineer, that if the more you require to go into the study, the
he
more
he's
earned, yes, if he's
yeah.
they're hired to do the study. Mm-hmm. So let's add a crash impact analysis. Let's add this.
He did not say how many years he worked for Des Moines, but he's been working for Snyder for about 2 weeks.
Not very long.
Two or 3 weeks, so.
So his knowledge is based on, you know, what he's going to share.
I'm not qualified to determine if a crash impact analysis is
necessary. How? We've been doing this for a while here.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate the work because this is basically something you're creating that we did not have.
Correct.
And really need. I just wondered where your time frame is on us looking at it to recommend that it be adopted. Are you going to have more reviews? Will you get more input? Or do you think next meeting will be ready to go?
likely August or the September meeting is when we would ask for adoption. But again, we just thought we were at a point where we made some changes. We thought we got some really good input. We wanted to share them with you. And because when we bring it to you, hopefully we've vetted it and everybody's on the same page with it. So likely next month, realistically, it might be September. I'm always pushing sooner. But yeah, it takes time.
Well, are you going to ask for more input? I guess I'm asking, are you done with the input phase? Done with phase.
We really didn't get a lot of input other than from the engineering staff and from these two individuals.
Do you send it to the NPO?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No comment?
Not yet.
So then you don't really have anybody
else? That's for comments. We could send it out again to see if we get additional.
Some of that might be hitting the right person, too. I don't know if you have a suggestion. We've been going through Tony.
Tony Philippines. Tony.
Yep.
Okay. So you don't need any action on that? Just any comments that you have. Make sure that we're on the right path.
Thank you.
The goal is to bring a complete ordinance to you for adoption. Okay. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
Staff comments.
I was just going to give you an update. Likely what you'll see next month is the city of Gilbert is making some improvements to their wastewater treatment plant, which is just southwest of the city. It's in the unincorporated area. They're building a structure. So in our ordinance, it requires a conditional use permit process. So there'll be a submittal before planning and zoning commission before it goes to the board adjustment for action. Property owner Joe Manatz, who owns some land south of South Dayton, he was before the Planning and Zoning Commission Board Adjustment for a batch plant, asphalt plant. He would like to do some extraction there. So we had initial discussions with him, conceptual review. I don't know that Amelia, I think, did say that she thought that we were very close to a complete submittal, so you may have seen something there. The ordinance was amended to allow cabins to occur in commercial campgrounds, and we were asked by one of the board members, that was supported by the board, to look at the time frame, because right now we only allow 30 days through the winter months for staying, and it was determined that that's not really reasonable. So we're looking at the cabins use as well as RVs, so that'll be an amendment. We're also looking at access. We've got provisions on access that address access for county roads, access when it involves new lots that are being created through subdivision, where it ultimately involves a process that involves the board of supervisors. So we're trying to kind of, I think, more do some house cleaning, keep cleaning.
Make the requirements more clear, more easy to understand.
Clear is always good.
Yeah. And then, of course, we've been working on stormwater amendment for several months. And now that we're moving closer to our support of the watershed assessment study, we're hoping to have that before you next month or the following. So that's what we have. I'd be happy to answer any questions about that.
Any questions? Any commission comments?
Emily, did I see where you passed your AICP?
I did, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
She's AICP certified.
Yay. By the way.
Thank you. I don't even know what that means, but it's got to be a big deal.
It's the American Institute of Certified Planners. There's an exam.
Well, it's not only an exam. You have to prove your professional
work experience.
It takes a long time to prepare. So,
and it's a 3-hour test or a 4-hour test?
I think it was 3.5.
So 180 questions?
170.
170. So,
we're
proud of
you.
Good job.
Thank you.
All right, any other commission comments? there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Nathan and McBride, we stand adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for your support.